It's Saturday, November 5th, 2016. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Golden, Colorado. Well, good morning, or good afternoon, or evening, whatever time you happen to be. I am very thankful and happy to be narrowcasting or broadcasting from a beautiful place. Our family is staying at an Airbnb here in Golden, Colorado, and last night we had a chance to see our son for the first time since he left for college, and he is doing well and seems to be happy, and we're looking forward to getting to spend the day with him. So I have not published a podcast here on Moving at the Speed of Creativity in a while. And in fact, in the last couple weeks, I've noticed that my podcast downloads from my almost weekly web show now with Jason Neifer, the EdTech Situation Room, have eclipsed the weekly downloads for Moving at the Speed of Creativity. So I host all of my podcasts on a website called S3Stat. So it's S, the number 3, S-T-A-T.com. And one of the downsides of hosting your podcasts on Amazon's S3 service is that you really don't have good statistics to know, you know, how many folks are downloading. And for a long, long time, Speed of Creativity's had over 200 requests per day. That didn't tell you exactly how many people are downloading. But EdTech Situation Room is over 230 per day now, and that's not surprising because that's the channel where I'm regularly publishing the most. So what I'd like to do in this show is briefly talk a little bit about artificial intelligence and a couple articles and videos that I have seen in the last week or so that I did not have a chance to talk about on EdTech SR with Jason this week. I want to talk about some great free online learning channels that if you're not taking advantage of these, you definitely should. Foremost among those is the K-12 Online Conference, but I want to talk about some other weekly podcasts and tech shows that I'm listening to, and give a big shout out to the Pocket Casts app, which is my favorite podcatcher on the iPhone. And lastly, I'm going to include about a 20-minute recording that I made this week with Megan Thompson, who is the art teacher for grades 1 through 4, our elementary art teacher at Cassidy School in Oklahoma City, where I am the director of technology. And for the last 7 weeks, Megan and I were co-teaching a Tuesday after school STEAM studio. And so we did a debrief together, just kind of looking at things that we thought went well and things that we would have changed and things we learned. And hopefully that will be helpful to you. So that is also available as a video. I recorded that using a free app on my iPhone called Voice Record Pro. And the wonderful thing about that app, and I'll include a link to that in the show notes, is that you can put a picture with it and then immediately save it to your iPhone or iPad camera roll as a video. And that is just wonderful because, as many of us know who've been working with podcasting with iOS devices, can appreciate it's challenging to not have a place to save that, either locally or, you know, online, or to be challenged by that. And so, anyway, that's the plan. So, without further ado, here we go with our lineup of topics for November 5th. All right, well, I'd first like to talk a little bit about an exciting announcement that Elon Musk made this last week, or I guess it was on October 28th. He unveiled the solar roof. And I have become a huge fan of Elon Musk and his work. I did have an opportunity to listen to his biography a few months ago, probably 5 or 6 months ago. But Elon Musk is the founder and CEO of several companies. He got his money initially through PayPal and the selling of the PayPal company, but then moved to want to work on solar cars with the company called Tesla, and then founded SpaceX, which is an effort to allow our our species, the human species of Earth, to become multi-planetary and to not just send robots or send explorers to Mars, but to actually colonize Mars with not just hundreds, but thousands of people. And then his third company, which he's been an investor in, is called Solar City. And this month in November 2016, Tesla has had a bid to purchase Solar City. And so I think investors are going to be voting on that. And I just saw a headline yesterday from the Washington Post that in the last week, our presidential candidate, Donald Trump, had announced how he was going to cut all funding for green energy, for research into solar energy and alternative energy sources and battery technology. And so, you know, here we are a week out of the election, and the next time I make a podcast, we'll hopefully have our elected president. Nate Silver, by the way, who writes a tech blog and is a statistical analyst, predicts, and I read this yesterday, Trump having a 1 in 3 chance of winning. Anyway, irrespective of what government is doing, it's exciting to see things that private industry is doing to not only move us into space, but I think most excitedly, move off of fossil fuels. This past week I had a chance to see a good portion of Leonardo DiCaprio's new documentary for the National Geographic Channel called After the Flood. He is a United Nations ambassador on climate change, and it is just, you know, living in Oklahoma as I do in the middle of the oil and gas industry, we have lots of climate change deniers. Our Senator Jim Inhofe, who Alexander and I had a chance to meet personally and visit with, and was very gracious to us, and his office was great to us. Probably 6 or 7 years ago, we visited Washington, D.C. Anyway, he happens to be one of the biggest U.S. political, you know, climate deniers, written all kinds of books about it. So anyway, I want to give a shout out to this video where Elon Musk announced the solar roof. This is a camouflaged roof that basically looks just like a regular roof, except it's made of glass. And there are several different kinds and styles. But the goal of Solar City with this announcement is to have the solar roof be more affordable and cheaper than what a regular roof would cost, last longer, but, you know, be able to provide solar power. And so they've brought out the second generation of what they call the power wall, which is a large battery. And then I think it also functions as an inverter. So, as you may know, and I know a little bit about electricity, when you get solar power from the sun, that comes as direct current. And because Nikola Tesla lost his debates to Thomas Edison back in the early part of the 20th century when they were debating the protocols and formats and mechanisms through which electricity would be transferred and utilized in homes, AC or alternating current power won. So you have to have an inverter to convert your DC solar power into AC power. And anyway, the solar wall has that role. And it's kind of cool as we're sitting here. I'm sitting here with my wife and girls looking out on a beautiful scene here in Colorado on the Front Range. And we're, you know, talking about our dreams of someday maybe building a home and wanting to have a home that would be completely energy independent and be able to rely on green energy technologies like solar and possibly like geothermal, maybe wind, but, you know, it'd be great to be able to rely primarily on solar. But then you'd still need batteries, right, for night when the sun is not up and, you know, when it's cloudy and things like that. So very exciting to see Solar City, Tesla moving forward with these technologies. The other thing I want to mention, and this ties to Elon Musk, is I want to give a shout out to a Stephen Levy article from October 25th called "The Google Assistant Needs You." And this is from a website called Backchannel that I just discovered actually in the last couple weeks. And the article talks about how, you know, Google has gone through several different phases with respect to harvesting lots of crowdsource data to make its tools better. Google had a free 411 service where you could call in and find out, you know, phone numbers or direct or addresses or look up companies just like you would in the Yellow Pages. And they were able to gather so much voice data to be able to do speech to text technology, and then to, you know, be able to do voice assistance and to recognize speech recognition. And then they actually decommissioned that, I guess, after they had gathered all of the data that they need. Now they're able to get things through smartphones and people talking, and they've released this new device for the home, which is a Google Assistant. Anyway, this article from Stephen Levy talks about how, quote, the company scientists think its new AI-based Factotum will be the biggest thing since search. Welcome to the transition. And the transition is this time we're living in when artificial intelligence is emerging and is on the horizon, but it is not a reality for everyone, and we're moving to this point. Now, the other shout out I'm going to give is to a 20-minute interview that Elon Musk gives with one of his employees that works in a group called OpenAI. In that particular video, Elon talks about his fears of AI, which, if you've done much reading about artificial intelligence, you hopefully know there are some major people who are very concerned about the potential negatives of developing artificial intelligence. And probably a lot of people think about Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Terminator when they think about the dark side of artificial intelligence. You know, this idea that the artificial intelligence may not remain compliant with the directives of its human masters, you know, and may want to do things that we don't want it to do. And it could even, you know, seek to, you know, kill humans. And you know, that's what Terminator is the story of, is an AI robot from the future that comes back and all this. Well, Musk, and so some of the main people that are talking about the concerns over AI, Elon Musk, who's a very smart guy we should pay attention to, Bill Gates has talked about this as well, founder of Microsoft, and then he's an astronomer and a scientist, and his name is eluding me right now, Dr. Stephen Hawking, very concerned about AI and the development of AI. Hawking is also concerned about us contacting extraterrestrial intelligence beyond our planet because of the fact that they may be hostile, and, you know, we may be blundering, may blunder into something that, you know, we may be ill-equipped to deal with. Pretty interesting stuff to have these very, very smart, you know, non-fringe scientists, talking about these kind of things. Anyway, in this interview, which I'll link in the show notes with Elon Musk, he talks about one of his fears of artificial intelligence is that it's not going to be democratized and available to a lot of folks, and that it could be very dangerous if only a small group of people, like a single corporation or a single country, you know, basically it's limited in who has access to it, because they could use that artificial intelligence for real negative purposes. And so I commend this article by Stephen Levy to you about the Google Assistant. We are in a transition time, according to Levy and others, where companies like Google and Amazon and Apple and Microsoft, they're gathering all kinds of data and resources to try and essentially make the scenario of our girls in the car on a car trip talking to Siri, you know, be much more human-like. You know, I don't know if you've seen a young person try to really talk to Siri on the iPhone and challenge her to, you know, carry on a conversation, but Siri has not had very good skills, which is an algorithm, right? These are programs and code that are being written to be able to connect the dots and, you know, continue a conversation. You can ask for simple tasks, you know, to open things or to look things up, but being able to carry on a conversation is not something that Siri has been able to do. Well, artificial intelligence is going to continue to grow by leaps and bounds, and it's an important thing for us to be aware of. It's an important thing for us to, you know, open up the career path for students with STEM skills, with code and things like that. But there's also a level of advocacy here where, just like Elon Musk is talking about in this video, we need to be advocates for the open dissemination and sharing of AI. Google did open source a tool, was it called Tensor or something? I should get the exact name of it, which was part of their effort to not just, keep their AI technologies hidden, but to really unleash powerful applications. And so there's so much here. So I want to give a shout out to that. And I think the last thing I'll say about AI is to talk a very brief bit about machine learning. And the shout out I need to give on some of this is one of my smartest friends, and I've been blessed and I'm so thankful to have a number of very smart friends, but one of my smartest friends, Bill Casebeer, I had a chance to go to the Air Force Academy with, and he graduated a year before I did, and we were debate partners and teammates on the debate team, and he's one of my he wasn't a classmate in my class, but one of my academy graduate classmates who I've stayed in touch with, and our families have stayed in contact with throughout the years. He has a dual doctorate in cognitive neuroscience and philosophy, but he was one of the first people that I ever heard talk about neural nets and machine learning and, you know, this idea of being able to develop computer code that comes closer to approximating some of the abilities and capacities of the human brain. And Bill's last active duty assignment was with DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, and now he works for Lockheed. DARPA, which I'll put a link to the show notes in this, just recently in the last few months started publishing its first podcast. It's called Voices from DARPA, and I'm going to talk a little more about podcasts. But anyway, I mean, Bill Casebeer is one of these people working on some of these things a long time ago, and it's really, really cool and exciting to see these things coming into the mainstream. With machine learning, as I understand it, you know, a computer program is created that is able to learn. And so it is able to program and change its own code as it receives input. And so you train it. And as you train it, it basically kind of becomes a black box. You don't completely understand or have visibility, you know, code-wise to understand why it is doing what it's doing. But if you're wanting to do something, for instance, photos with photo recognition, and this is a case where machine learning is being used now, we've got massive databases from surveillance cameras as well as just photos being shared with social media, with folks online. You know, let's identify, you know, who the people are, who are the males and who are the females, and then being able to identify individuals and then not having, you know, false, excuse me. Hopefully I'll get to edit that out. Not having something, you know, crazily false in terms of, you know, I think in some of the early days of this kind of thing, you know, there were some problems with, black African Americans being identified as gorillas and not as people. And so, you know, there's all this input that people give to the machine saying, yes, that's a correct identification. No, that's not a correct identification. But all of that feedback over time, helps the machine become better. Well, there's some real interesting ethical aspects to this because, you know, now when you apply, we're in the process of refinancing our home. When you're refinancing your house, you go through a loan application process and a review process. And so people look at things like your credit rating, your credit history, and there's reasons why, you know, you're approved or denied, or why you're approved for a certain level of a loan. And you can pretty much understand and see those reasons. If at the point where a computer is allowed to do these things and reach decisions and recommendations, and I'm thinking not only about loans but about insurance and healthcare and all kinds of things, you know, we can reach a point where we may or may not be able to actually say, you know, okay, I understand that decision. It may be, you know, the machine has decided, and so there's a lot of ethical questions and things like that can come into this. And so anyway, I want to give a shout out to this Stephen Levy article. Definitely follow Stephen Levy on Twitter if you do not already. And, you know, be watching what Elon Musk is doing whether it's Solar City, it's Tesla, it's SpaceX, very, very exciting and important work, not just on a commercial level, but really on the level of humanity and our future that he is doing and that his teams are doing. All right, so the second thing I'd like to talk about briefly are some wonderful, wonderful channels for free online learning that if you're not already taking advantage of, I really encourage you to do so. The fact that you're listening to this podcast indicates that you are already exploring, or maybe you're fully immersed in the power of asynchronous online learning, meaning that, you know, we're not live. I'm recording this and you're listening to this later and this is being archived online. So we're not present physically in the same physical space and in the same time. Asynchronous learning is just huge. You know, Kevin Honeycutt, I've heard it called rewindable learning. You know, being able to have access to content that you can consume at your leisure, whether you are on a walk or a run or in the car or, you know, at home at your desk or bed, whatever, you know, wherever you happen to be, giving you that power to time and place shift. This is the power of the podcast. Well, the K-12 Online Conference is in its 11th year this year. It started in 2006, and this last week on October 31st, it kicked off with a wonderful three-part keynote by Julie Lindsay, one of the best innovators and pioneers in the area of global collaboration. And this last Thursday night, K-12 Online hosted a synchronous panel on YouTube Live with about 10 folks that Julie facilitated, talking about global collaboration and the challenges that we face in schools, not just in the United States, but internationally. It was a wonderfully international panel with folks from Australia as well as the United States, and we had a student who was involved and talking about the benefits, and it was very inspiring. So I want to encourage you to check that out. You can find all of the links and then a whole schedule for the conference on k12onlineconference.org. You can follow the Twitter channel K12 Online to stay up to date. And coming up next, the conference this year, in the past years, it's basically been four strands with four keynotes, a pre-conference keynote, and then usually about 10 presentations per strand. So a little over 40 presentations in the space of about 2 weeks. This year, K-12 Online is taking a mini keynote approach, and so the content is being shared over a wider period of time. And then it's also less content. And so the next strand is going to be learning spaces. And we're really excited that David Jakes is the keynote for that strand. And that is going to be coming up here soon as well in the month of November. So I think we have another week before his keynote goes live. And then we'll have another YouTube Live synchronous panel. And then there's more that's coming next year after January. So please check out K-12 Online. Excited that there's a Voxer channel that we're using this year. Last December, my wife Shelley and I participated in EdCamp Voxer, which Voxer is kind of a hybrid, asynchronous, synchronous. It's like a walkie-talkie. And when you talk on a Voxer channel, you usually push the button down on your phone on the app. And if others are listening at that moment, they can hear you live, but all of your audio is also archived. And so you can go back and play that as a stream to kind of catch up. In fact, I'll catch up a little later today on what conversations have been happening in the channel. And so anyway, it's a great way to make connections and to have an interactive conversation that can transcend time zones and geography and, you know, facilitate the kind of conversations that K-12 Online has been doing for a long time. But in the early days, those were, you know, primarily through comments on the blog. We've gone through different iterative uses of Web 2.0, or, you know, read-write web technologies that facilitate this. So it's exciting that Voxer is being added. So please check that out. The other ones that I want to basically give you a shout out to and a recommendation for, one of our IT staff asked me this week about podcasts and, you know, what tech podcasts I listen to. And so here are just a few. I'll include in the show notes, pardon me, a link to all of my podcast subscriptions. I periodically update this list, and you can find this on my handouts website, which is wiki.westfriar.com/podcasts. And this is a Google site, and I have links to all the direct RSS feeds that you can use to subscribe to these podcasts. Now, many podcasts are listed within the iTunes library, within their universe, but I've really never liked that much Apple's podcasting, you know, apps. I've liked others better. And so my favorite one is called Pocket Casts. It's developed by a company out of Australia. It's available for iPhone as well as Android. And the tools that it gives as far as following your podcast and pausing and being able to rewind and forward, like, you know, 30 seconds or 10 seconds or whatever, forward and back. Anyway, it is just awesome. So the podcast I'm listening to the most, of course, I dearly miss Seedlings, which was a combined effort of three main educators, Bob Sprankle, Alice Barr, and Cheryl Oakes. Bob passed away this last December, and so still very much mourning and missing him and his voice. And I had a chance 2 weeks ago to get together with Alice and Cheryl on the EdTech SR podcast. But anyway, Seedlings left a gap. But so what I'm doing with podcasting on Wednesday nights, most weeks, I'm actually doing a weekly show now called the EdTech Situation Room. You can find that on edtechsr.com, or you can follow it on Twitter at edtechsr. Jason Neifer, who is Tech Savvy Teach on Twitter, is a wonderfully geeky and awesome educator that now lives in Missoula, Montana, and he has various hats that he wears. He is the assistant director and the curriculum director for the Montana Virtual Academy, which is a fantastic online school that provides supplementary course options for high school students in the state of Montana. He also works with NCCE, which is a great ed tech organization in the Pacific Northwest, and he is their administrator in residence, does a lot of blogging for them. So Jason and I basically take news articles that have come out in the last week or so, and then talk about those and put an educational lens on those. So check that out, and that is without a doubt my most frequent, you know, most frequently updated podcast channel. But the other ones that I listen to that I'd recommend, the Clockwise podcast is wonderful. It has a nice format, 30 minutes. They have four people, the two hosts and the two guests, that each present a topic, and they kind of go around the table and talk about those. And it's just it's really good. They talk a lot about Apple technology, but other kinds of technology as well. Some of it, you know, isn't just gadgets and apps. It's also, you know, things that you are using and doing with technology and the ways it impacts your life. I really enjoy that one. Another one that's a weekly tech podcast that I don't listen to every show, but I listen to, I'd say, you know, every other show or every third show at least, is called The Committed. And you can find that on thecommitted.tv. Their Twitter channel is Committed Show. Again, I'm including all of these links in the podcast show notes. So if you go to the show notes, you'll be able to directly link to these. But this two guys up in the Pacific Northwest, and then one Brit over in the United Kingdom. And they have an hour-long show where they'll talk about all kinds of technology stuff. They are also pretty Apple-focused, a couple of them being Apple developers. But love their analysis and always, you know, benefit from things that they discuss. So the other one I'll do a shout out to is called Note to Self. Note to Self is, they advertise it as a podcast about being human. Manoush Samarodi is the host for that podcast, and she does a great job talking about the impact of technology on our lives and then things that we can do to be proactive. The latest shows were about mindfulness and talking about how we do things to train our physical bodies, but we need to be doing things to train our minds as well, and, you know, not just being sort of a passive bus rider on this fast, you know, bullet train of life that we're riding in the 21st century, with how quickly things are changing and information is being shared. But, you know, being thoughtful, being deliberate, being intentional, and you know, making changes in our lives, in the ways that we consume and process information, the way we filter it, the way we share it, the, what, you know, our relationship to our screens. you know, I think I've gotten a better sense from that podcast of how we are kind of all becoming cyborgs now, with smartphones. And I say we all, there's the digital divide and it's real, but you know, screens have and continue to have a huge impact on our lives and on our relationships, but also on our thinking, right? Because there are ideas and there are, events that enter into our consciousness now because of the access that we enjoy through smartphones to each other and to different news channels. It really, you know, we really are living in a day of global consciousness because our capacity to know what's happening on the other side of the planet or just what's happening, you know, with our circle of friends or circle of acquaintances, is phenomenally amplified and enhanced by these tools. Of course, there's also a dark side to these things, but I think it's important to have a balanced perspective. We don't want to hide from the downsides and the negatives, and we want to take steps to make sure we're not being, you know, overcome by the darkness that can be carried by these technology tools. But at the same time, we don't want to just think that it's all darkness and it's all bad. These are really powerful tools, which means they can be used for good and for evil. So anyway, that's a shout out to several different online learning channels that I will commend to you and again link in the podcast show notes. What I'd like to lastly do is give a quick introduction to this next 20-minute segment, and this will be the end of the podcast. The last year was my first year to shift roles from being a full-time fourth and fifth grade STEM teacher in Yukon, Oklahoma at Independence Elementary and become a director of technology at the Cassidy School, which is an independent school serving about 910, 920 students in pre-K through 12th grade. And we have about 250, 270 faculty and staff and employees at the school. And the fall of the first year when I was there, I collaborated with one of our elementary science teachers, Art Lopez, who teaches fourth grade science, and we did an after school STEM club, much, you know, similar to the STEM clubs that I had the previous 2 years at Independence Elementary for kids. Did some Minecraft, did some catapult projects, you know, did some different building design projects and group challenge projects. But pretty short, was like, you know, 7 weeks, one day after school. Well, this year, Megan Thompson, who is our art teacher and an amazingly wonderful educator and creative soul, I really do find myself drawn so much to artists and to the fresh perspective which they bring on the world and life, and also the focus on making and creating. And as my wife and I were talking about this last night, I think it's also not insignificant. It is a significant thing that art teachers in most schools are not subject to the same kinds of restrictions, requirements, and mandates that, for instance, regular classroom teachers can be with literacy and with math and with all kinds of other curriculum standards. So it can be wonderful to have autonomy as an educator, and that's one of the great things I've found with after-school STEM Club and STEAM Club, or in this case, STEAM Studio, is that it really provides a wonderful time to have some freedom and autonomy to try some new things with students and, you know, in this case, to also be co-teaching, which is not really the norm in most classrooms and most schools. Very invigorating, and I'm just so thankful for the chance to have been able to do this with Megan and to look forward to doing this again, because I think we're going to do this again in the fall next year, and hopefully we're going to actually collaborate on a few Minecraft EDU challenge events that will not be so multi-week, but I'm wanting to continue that kind of use of Minecraft and exploration of Minecraft with students and for learning, because I know there's a lot of exciting creativity and design opportunities and collaboration and problem solving, and lots of really good skills are developed through that. So without further ado, we're going back to Oklahoma City this past week on Thursday, actually just a couple days ago, in the wonderful art classroom of Megan Thompson, debriefing and reflecting on our experiences in the STEAM studio in the fall of 2016. Well, hello. Today is Thursday, November the 3rd, 2016, and this is Wes Fryer with Megan Thompson here at Cassidy School in Oklahoma City, and we have just finished 7 weeks of an after-school STEAM studio after-school program, and we're going to reflect a little bit on what we did and what happened and things we might change, and just kind of share this out. And would love if anybody listens to this, feedback and ideas, because I'm sure there are other folks in other places wrestling with some of the similar kinds of questions that we are about how we can help kids be curious and creative and be tinkerers and be makers and things like that. So, Megan, can you tell us who you are, what you do, and how did this STEAM Studio thing come to pass this semester?
Yes. Hello. My name's Megan Thompson. I teach lower division art. So I get to work with first and fourth grade students, and I love working in here, and their time goes by so quickly. And we had the STEAM Studio class, and I realized that our after school time goes by so quickly too. By the time they get in and have snack and get started and clean up, the time seems to just like sand in your fingers. It just goes really quickly. So, I wanted to offer a STEAM Studio class for students because I like the idea of integrating art with as many things as we can, and I try to do that in the classroom with their language art classes or other classes and projects that they're doing. I like to do that just so that the connection happens more than once, because that's important for them to have a moment and then to relive that moment in a different way. It's kind of magical for students, I think. And I think that happens, and I get to see that happen. So getting them in a place where we can make that happen even more, if that can happen,
right,
is great. So being able to talk about science, technology, art, engineering, and math together is a great idea. I don't know if that always happens the way you plan it to, but I think we got off to a good start, and things started rolling, and try to figure out with the group that we have to work with what works best with those kids.
Did your trip to San Francisco and the Exploratorium influence this? Or where did you come up with the idea of wanting to do STEAM?
Well, I know that we talked in the past briefly about STEM and the STEM class you guys offered last year. And I always have, my whole life, have felt like, well, what about art? You know, so, and art's part of that. Design's part of all of that. I mean, it fits.
Absolutely.
With everything, right, that is STEM. Art fits already in there.
Right.
It's kind of in there. Not to take away from STEM, but art's a part of
that. Well, creativity and design. It's essential, you know, to be a part of that process, iterating and being able
to. And it's there, and some of the kids have that and may not always realize that they've got it or that they're doing that.
Right. Right.
You know, I know that there have been lots of times that I'm doing that and I don't realize it, because when you're being creative and thinking about what you're working on, you're not always thinking about, you know, on the outside, like how you're actually being creative or how you're actually, you know, thinking, well, if this happens, what might happen next. You don't always think of, you're in the moment and you're not thinking about, well, this is, thinking like a designer, you know.
Yeah.
You're in math class and you're thinking that, or
what's the right answer?
Yeah.
That's a different way of thinking than trying to be outside of the box.
So this offering, I've always wanted to do some kind of art club, and I didn't really want art club to be a thing like you have to pay for, you know, an extra class to come into art club. But I wanted to offer classes, and if offering an extra class is an extra, you know, extracurricular enrichment class, and I'm glad to offer those, really. So I love doing things like weaving or clay, and I know kids just want more time for just drawing.
Mm-hmm.
So I love offering classes in the fall and spring when I can. And I thought STEM, there's a lot of talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a buzzword, I think,
mm-hmm,
for maybe some people.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want it to be a thing where it's just a buzzword. You know, I
yeah
want to experiment with
it. Concrete.
Try it.
Yep.
See what works. See how I can do it in my classroom. Like we were talking about earlier, having that small group of kids to kind of test things out with.
Yep.
Test the waters.
Sandbox.
Is great. So I got to test some things. And
what were your favorite highlights of the year? We had kids from basically 3:15 to 4:15, only 7 weeks. I mean, it went really quick. What stands out in your mind as real highlights, things that you enjoyed the most, or, you know, just stories that were like, this was awesome that this happened?
What my mind goes back to is doing the art bots. I think that was a great way that we started the project with. I love getting to talk to students about different ways or modes to make art. There are a lot of different ways to make art, and it's awesome to be able to help them create something that starts making art on its own. Like, it's kind of out of your control. All of a sudden, you've created something that didn't exist before, and now here it is making its own marks. And so we made these art bots. We had a couple different examples, didn't we?
How would you describe, for people who don't know what an art bot is, what is an art bot?
Well, we made these little jitterbugs, basically. Little tiny contraptions with a battery, just a regular, like, AA battery and a DC motor. So you put those two together with a couple alligator clips and in some way design it so that it stays upright. And when you do your positive and negative, and then all of a sudden there's action and it's moving and it wants to come to life. And so that on its own is cool for students to see, you know.
And this was a new twist on it, because I've done the Jitterbug Robot project before, but hadn't done it as an art bot. And I had heard a Science Friday podcast a year or so ago. It was talking about challenging people to make art with machines, you know. And so it was interesting. It can always happen where if you show kids a prototype, you know, we're kind of wired to think like, oh, well, I need to make what the teacher made, you know, prototype. And we did see that. We kind of took that as our first project, and then we shifted into stations with different areas that the kids could do and, choosing, you know, what they wanted to work and build and make. And I think that was good. Definitely to start with something concrete that they were able to make, and because it's a big shift to just sort of say, hey, here we are in the STEAM studio, go make and create. I mean, some kids have no problem with that, but I would say that the majority of our kids needed quite a bit more.
Yeah, I think they're used to having
facilitating.
That.
Yeah,
I mean, they're used to having a bit of direction, and we gave them direction, but we also, I thought we did a really nice job of bridging that art bot project into, all right, well, you could make it, try it another way, do it a different way. What else could your art bot do? What else could your bot do? And offer that to them, you know, right. Experiment in a new way, making this differently. How would you do it differently? Or try something else out. Yeah. Try something with the cardboard. See what you could make with that. See how you could attach that in with cardboard.
Yeah.
I had some ideas of other things I wanted to do, but, you know, just time restraints.
Right.
They didn't all happen. And so when we broke out with the session or the groups, not groups, but the different centers,
mm-hmm.
That gave kids some ideas. They could do this or this, and then different class times when they come, they usually worked in a different one.
And that helped us. We ended up we had Makey, if you're not familiar with that, it's called a creation kit, but it's just a way to make a circuit, and you can hook it up to a computer to play a game or make music or do different kinds of things. We had a cardboard creation, we had a, I don't know, upcycle destruction.
Yeah, we had a box of found things.
Recycled things that you could take apart and try to make something from. We had two girls that kind of made their own station, which, what did they call that? The wire, something
just
wiring?
Just simple little wire where the girls were making little creations. Mm-hmm. And I told one girl who was really curious in the wire, interested, always wanting to take wire home, and part mm-hmm. of me wants to say, yes, take it home.
Right.
Keep working, but bring it back and make some characters, and we can put, green screen and make it into, where are these characters? What are they doing?
And that is something that we didn't get to do that I would like say, look, we'll write down and do this again, is to bring in some storytelling and creativity and maybe some movie making, right? Because mm-hmm. even with little puppets or something, doing something really small, now you've made these characters, what's its name? Well, what's its voice? How does it sound?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a way to push
like
their creativity in a way that I do every day in
uh-huh.
here. They tell me they're done. Well, maybe you're really not done. You know, you can push this further.
Right.
Tell me more about it.
Right.
Show me more about it.
Yeah.
And stop motion would be something mm-hmm. I'd like to get into.
Right. Coma is an app my wife has used a lot on her iPad where the kids can make a simple stop motion.
I love that.
And that
I haven't
would
played
be,
with it,
yeah,
but I want to.
Because anything that you're making in STEAM Studio, you could then take it to Coma and make a short little stop motion with it. So that.
I wish that we had given them more time to, maybe use an app like that or, another app to show mm-hmm. what they made,
well,
how
maybe,
they did it,
like you said,
why
you,
they did it.
You're still teaching these kids. They're still coming to class. Maybe you could have, and I can help you set up with a little mini tripod or a little holder for the iPad, you know, kind of a little stop motion station, because there would be things that they're making. And when those kids are done, or I don't know, I mean, that might be something that we could find a way for kids to be able to iterate with.
I'd like that.
Yeah. I personally wish that I had been more of a maker myself. I mean, this, I'm so thankful to have a chance to do this, even though it's just, you know, 1 hour a week for 7 weeks, and it, and time goes by really fast. I love the co-teaching and the chance to do teaching, you know, with kids, to work with them. But, you know, like this last session, I just real quickly put together a marble run and you know, play with that a little bit. I myself want to be doing more of the making and creating, and sort of just sort of getting my hands dirty, you know, with the projects, with the kids.
Yeah.
'Cause I think, I don't know, there's good dynamics that come from that. And I, for my own curiosity, I mean, there were things last summer at iPad Palooza down in Austin that I heard a physics teacher talk about with the science, and engineering of light and sound. And I didn't really get to explore in that kind of way. So I guess I want to, I say make myself, it sounds like it's a forced thing, but really be intentional about what am I curious about? Because that's what we're asking the kids to do, is to say, well, what are you curious about? Well, if I'm not modeling for them, well, I'm really curious about light waves and sound waves and how I can make those visible.
Well, and they can get in on that with you.
True,
you know,
right.
You can discover things while you're discovering it. They can kind of watch you and see that and help you maybe or notice something maybe you didn't. And I think them being in on it with you, or kind of watching your progress, you know, as how it just little baby steps on a project, you know, that you're working on.
Well, passion and enthusiasm is exciting and contagious, you know. So I think that encouraging, trying to model that and do that, and then also just, you know, show them different pathways. I loved how we had some successes with kids making some things. A couple weeks ago, one of our students made a little game that was involving straws and little cardboard pieces and, you know, moving them back and forth, but they played this game. And, you know, when you think about it, it might not seem like it was that big of a deal, but taking the resources that you have and building something in a short amount of time, you know, and then playing a game, you want to tell the story about how he made a project that involved invention and sees himself as more of an inventor now?
So my second graders are doing this weaving project using the extra CDs that you brought into the classroom, for the Jitterbugs or ArtBots. Those extra CDs I've kind of taken over and, made them into looms. So the second graders are learning radial weaving, a radial weaving project that has not been a headache, but it's been crazy, and I'm really happy to say that we are almost finished, and they feel so good about their work. But they're not really traditional dream catchers, so we called them dream finders and thought about your dreams and your dreams of where you might want to go, things you might want to do, not necessarily what I want to be when I grow up, but, you know, what do you dream for yourself or for your family or your world? You know, what gifts do you have? What are you bringing into the world? So I love being able to talk about that with students and giving them time to think on that, because I don't know how much time they really think on that. And so anyway, the kid with the cardboard game, I was really pleased to see on his feather that they wrote a word. They had some time to brainstorm in their sketchbook, and then they would write a word on their feather of their dream for themselves, or like what I was talking about. So his feather says inventor. He sees himself as an inventor. Mm-hmm. And that's really cool. This class that may have reinforced that I can make something new, and people will know, you know, see that this didn't exist before. And
there's a deep side of that. It makes me think of Avatar. I see you, right?
Yeah.
Like, I see you, inventor.
I
see this inside you. But, you know, having that affirmed and brought out, that is huge.
Yeah, it really is.
And that made me think, we've done a movie challenge. So I'm challenging Megan to see Meet the Robinsons,
because
that is one of my favorite movies for many reasons, but it fits in very much with being curious, being an inventor. The whole theme of that is keep moving forward. You know, don't be stopped by life and tough stuff that happens, and helping kids, you know, glimpse their own capability to create and to invent, to imagine, and then for it to be manifested in the world. And by the way, if you know what this is called academically, let me know. But there's something to, you know, having a physical manifestation. You probably do this all the time with art, right? I mean, having an idea and then you have this clay and then you make, maybe it's exactly what you were thinking, maybe it's an approximation of what you were thinking, but like, isn't that powerful? Like being able to go from the imagination of the mind to a physical object that you're holding.
Yeah, and all the steps in between, you know, point A to there, all those steps of it being so hard, of it, you wanting to give up, you wanting to stop, people telling you it's not going to work. There's so many little things in there that are really monumental, so that when you do realize or create, you know, what it was you had in mind, you've gone through a lot of different things, and when you get to a point where it feels finished, it really is huge. It really is a good feeling to create something that started as just an idea, and to know, wow, this was just an idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just an idea, and you can make it happen.
That reminds me of another student who had struggled with his jitterbug art bot, you know, and originally wanted to make it with pretzels. This is one of the things where you're like, I know that's not going to work, but, you know, maybe we just let him do it and, you know, give it a try. And it was okay. You know, it's, as a teacher, I'm many times in that mode where I'm like, here's what I want you to do. And
yeah,
I know how it's going to work and it's not going to work. And I struggle giving kids that freedom to say, well, why don't you try that? You know, well, how'd that work for you? You know, how did that go?
And that's what this was. That's what this was. That time to experiment. And if it's not going to work, just time to kind of figure that out on your own, because that's where a lot of learning comes. When his pretzel creation, I saw it in slow motion slowly fall off the table and crash into pieces. And I think all his work just crumbled. Oh. And I saw that happening in the beginning. But, you know, when that happened, it kind of was a shrug and no big deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. Well, and this is where the computational thinking comes in, which is something we hear people talk about with STEM and making. And, you know, because it wasn't just a pure art project, it involved some engineering, a circuit, you know, it involved, does the motor run? You know, there's troubleshooting in that. There was feedback in that. And, you know, even I was telling Megan the story with the student Tuesday, with light, you know, there was another project you did, the LED light card
a greeting card.
Greeting card.
That would light up.
That's right. You know, he was playing with that, but hadn't put the LED light just on the battery immediately for it to light up. And he was like, whoa, look at that. And we used some wires to do that. And you know, those can be kind of magical moments when literally the light comes on and then you see them, you know, light up. But this is why it's good too to co-teach and be in that kind of environment. Cause as we talked about, well, maybe we just let him do that. I mean, it's good for kids to have freedom to experiment and to iterate and maybe fail, but to learn.
Well, and that's part of it, cause there will be failures. And I tell them, you know, that's sort of part of the process. That's part of finding your ideas, that they won't always work and that it's not a masterpiece from the very beginning.
Right.
And it won't be, and it would be kind of boring if it was.
Right, right. Okay, your movie challenge to me is to watch Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Why is this a great film?
Oh, gosh. Oh, no, you didn't do that. Well, as you were helping me remove thousands of photos, a.k.a. memories, from my iPad, and watching the iPad just slowly, you know, change and shift, and those images are being sucked away. It's kind of like the people in the movie who were trying desperately to remove these memories of each other, you know, of a love, that failed love that they're removing, and all those memories, childhood memories, and then the memories hiding and hiding because they don't want to be removed.
Oh, wow.
Being sucked away. It's
And what's crazy is there's scientists now looking at how we can try and affect memory, like either putting memories into people's brains that weren't there before.
So would that be like giving them an experience?
Yeah, yeah. It's bizarre. There's some weird stuff going on.
I don't know
about
that.
I don't either. There's lots of things to wonder about. Okay, well, where do we go from here? If we do this again, you've talked about time. Any other thoughts on what we might do differently or how we might approach it different from what we did this year?
Well, I would like to have a little more time with them, just even 15 minutes, you know, would give them that little extra time and then enough time for cleanup where it wouldn't feel so rushed. So the time, yes, a little more time on a small project of them working on an app or doing that stop motion, something for them to show us what happened for them.
Yeah.
What they figured out.
And maybe we could have also some other project options. Like if you want to go to the makers, to the Steam Studio, Maker Studio, and you want to, you know, play with the Makey Makey or the cardboard, but, there were some students that seemed to maybe need a little bit more structure, a little bit more, you know, do this project. So I don't know. Maybe we could have a couple other projects, kind of like the ArtBot, you know, that are sort of on the menu. I don't know. I like menus. So I'm just thinking about what's the menu
kinda
for what you want to do.
There.
Some are going to be more open-ended than others, I guess. You know, some might be, hey, here's this box of stuff, you know, see what you can make. And then something else might be, yeah, here's a catapult, you know, here's the stuff to make this, you know, you want to build that.
Well, I really like the idea of offering some kind of challenge, you know, and I don't think we really gave them that challenge.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But offering that challenge of making something that will support this weight or that, you know, giving them
challenge.
A challenge
yeah,
like that,
challenge.
I think is a great way to invite them to, to explore.
And that's something else that if... there's a website, stemseeds.org, that I helped get started a couple years ago. And actually, we need to talk dates because I think in this summer in June, if we want to, I've been talking to some people about doing like a Maker Steam STEM Institute, like doing several days.
Cool.
We'll talk about that. But it's, I forget how this just segued to what I was saying about...
Well, something I think about is how we're modeling. You know, we may not have modeled that, you know, our own curiosities and projects that we're working on during this class, but we are modeling collaborating, you know, someone from a different discipline than you, and how collaborating with somebody, you know, you bring different... a lot of different ideas and how that's important to create something. And I think we did create a pretty cool class and a pretty cool experience for them that I know they want more of.
They do. Yeah. So part of our challenge and why one of the reasons we're doing this is to share this out, right? So if you have been doing an after school club with STEAM or with STEM or with making, you know, share what you're doing. There's a good hashtag MakerEd. For Maker in Education, and also, of course, STEAM. So, any closing thoughts? I would go back to our sandbox idea, right? If we can find spaces where we can be creative and the stakes can be kind of low, you know, like, cause we weren't taking grades and, you know, this wasn't something where there was a lot of pressure on either one of us. There was definitely a lot of room to experiment and to try something new. Mm. And I think we can see where that kind of overflow into other things that we teach and other things that we do. It's good. So
yeah,
I know there's some things that are worth investing in doing. You know, breaking bread and eating with people is always a good thing generally. But having that time after school that's just more, hey, let's experiment with these powerful ideas and these suggestions and then, you know, getting to iterate. That's the design process and that's part of this too, I think, is being able to have some freedom. But also, this was a catalyst, right? This brought us together each week. Sometimes I was gone, sometimes you were gone.
It was great having two people, you know, co-teaching with someone and collaborating with somebody. Find somebody that you can work with, that you work well with, and that you can, you know, share ideas and
share responsibility and kind of feed off of and then just kind of build on. Because we, even the ArtBot project and the ways that the centers came together, you know, they were different than they would have been if you were doing it by yourself or I was doing it by myself.
So. Yeah.
It's good. All right. Everyone stay creative and keep sharing. Adios.
Bye. Adios.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution only license. Learn more at www.speedcreativity.org.